It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azure Talon? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
All right. Okay. I have one of those much beloved questions I have where I have noticed a behavior I do, and I want to know if it's weird or if other people do it.
Much beloved?
I assume. The problem with this one, though, is I believe you will not be able to participate. I don't believe you have probably ever been in this situation, so I don't know that you'll be able to. Don't worry, it's not creepy or anything. You just wouldn't have ever been in it.
Okay.
Possibly. Have you ever prepared a frozen pizza of which one of the toppings was pepperoni or veggie pepperoni? Specifically in slices, like circular slices.
Yes.
Oh, all right. All right. Then you can also participate. But mostly I want the listeners to go to themagicaltalkinghat.com and tell me how they are. Because I didn't do this for a long time, but when I was younger, I finally sort of put it together and I did this. And then I haven't had a pizza like this in a long time, but I did tonight. Because the pepperoni discs are just on top of everything.
Usually, yeah.
And when you get it, they're clumped. They fall in and they're it's a disaster. So I take them off and very carefully organize them on the pizza before I put it in the oven. How about you?
I have done both things where I will do that with a frozen pizza if they're accessible like that and if they can come on without being ripped or whatever.
Yeah. If they're like buried and stuff, then you're out of luck. Although they won't have moved around.
Or if I'm making a pizza with pepperoni on, and this was true was true back in the day when I ate meat pepperoni sometimes, I would try to like put them in groups so that when I cut it, I wouldn't be cutting over one.
Yeah. No, and I think that's standard. I think pizza makers do that, but I do it with frozen ones. And I have a system because the pizza is always going to be 8 slices.
Okay.
So, is that for me? Can you tell them I'm busy doing a podcast?
No.
So unprofessional. 8 slices. So I put 8 equidistant slices down. And then it has to go in groups of 4. If there's 12, 4 equally distant slices will get a second piece. If there is, like I had tonight, 16, everybody gets 2 pieces. And it goes like that. If there is less than 4, I eat them. In fact, tonight there were 17 and I ate the last one.
I mean, I think that's pretty much how I would do it too. I think that's...
I didn't know people would be weirded out by that because they're still kind of cold and borderline frozen. I mean, they've been in my hand while I'm sorting them, but...
Right, but pepperoni, pepperoni is a pre-cooked thing. I mean,
it's not a health risk. Some people just might think it's gross.
No, I'm pretty sure I did the same thing. If I couldn't distribute them equally, if there were any left over, I would just eat them.
I didn't always, though. Like, this was a revelation somewhere in, like, my teenage years or something. Before then, I would just cook it how it was, which was insane because it would be like a big clump of pepperoni on like one side and then the rest was just cheese.
I'm pretty sure I just as often just threw it in there and didn't worry about it. But yeah, if I was putting it on something and some of it was falling off or they were loose or it looked like they were easy to arrange, sure, I would do that. And of course, that was always a good excuse to eat one. or two.
Right?
Yeah, I was. So, yep.
There you go. All right. Well, now we got that resolved. No, go to the blog and tell us how your feelings are with the frozen pepperoni on the frozen pizza. And what did you do? Because I just did it tonight. We normally just get a sausage pizza. Thursday night is frozen pizza and salad. I make it before we podcast. And usually it's a sausage pizza, but I was like getting tired of that particular one. So I got the same brand, but it was sausage and pepperoni. Or ultimate combo, as they call it. I believe it, the pizza we get is a thin crust called Bellatori or something like that. It's really good. I believe every single flavor of pizza they have is called ultimate something. We usually get ultimate sausage. This was ultimate combo. I've seen ultimate pepperoni, ultimate supreme. I even think their four cheese is called ultimate four cheese. Like, that's... No, you're killing it.
You're killing, watering down your brand.
Killing the word ultimate. It's no longer... All right. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Magical Talking Hat Podcast. Only podcast in the world that, due to just a lot of litigious, copyright-obsessed people out there, has had 182 different titles for the podcast. So you may have known us previously when we were called WTF with Mark Maron, Jawbone Radio, Welcome to Night Vale, the Kevin Pollak Chat Show, Science Friday with PBS or NPR. That was a big one. Radio Labs, The Monkees. I was really surprised that one, because they don't even have a podcast, but that was really bad. The Dark Knight Rises. Again, not a podcast. I don't know what these people was wrong with them. You Made It Weird with Pete Holmes. And the Emergency Broadcast System. We came up with all of those on our own.
We thought we were making them up.
We didn't know they already were there.
No.
Who figures Kevin Pollak is a real name? I mean, come on. It's a fish.
Exactly.
It's not right. Anyway, I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 494.
Oh, we're getting close here.
Very close.
To actually having to worry about this 500 thing.
Yep.
We really got to set that up. Beth's in now, she said on the blog.
That's what she said.
The tricky part is going to be Craig, because I would like to get Craig in.
Mm. So what time is it?
The problem is I don't know that we can get Craig in, and because like you and I could meet with Craig at a reasonable time. But I don't know that a time that would work for Craig is also a time that would work for, like, people with jobs.
But what time is it where he lives, like, right
probably
now?
Probably 7 or 8 hours ahead.
Ahead?
Yes.
Hmm. Yeah, that would be a problem, probably.
That's why I said it.
Yes, that is why you said it. So, yeah, I don't know what we would do.
Greg, you got any advice? Run it by us. We do a weekend one. But that seems
I mean, if we did it on a Saturday at noon or something.
Possibly. We'll have to see.
Because we did episode 100 not on a Thursday, right? We did it.
I don't know. Yeah, I think it was not on a Thursday.
Yeah.
But I got plans most Saturdays.
Well, this could be one of them.
I do. No, I'm like all through September, I'm running a game for some people. And when it's not September, I'm playing in a different game. There's a lot of shit going on.
Huh.
So for those of you just joining us, come be on our 500th episode. we have a hat. It is magical. In that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. People, more people, please. We need you people. Help us out. We're getting in trouble here. People, right into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little notes, comments, topics, questions, things like that. The hat, all on its own, magically transmogrifies those emails into little note cards that manifest physically within the hat itself. We, its copyright ignorant servants, draw those note cards out of the hat, read them out loud on the air, talk about them till we're bored, do that for about an hour. That's the whole show, except the parts that aren't, which is most of it. I also did one of these gestures off camera. I don't know why. I was doing the whole talk about them till we're bored, and we're bored, so I was doing the, like, disposing of it, but I was like, not on camera. Why? How is this helpful? So, yeah.
You think, have you gotten any feedback as to how many people are watching as opposed to just listening?
No. Enough people have made comments on the YouTube or about the YouTube that I'm confident like 3 people are watching. In the same way that I am confident like 7 people are doing anything involved.
Okay.
Beth and Mark are behind. I think they're both far enough along, though, that they're into the YouTube ones.
Oh, yeah.
So, I don't know. You know what I found out just today?
What's that?
That video game Control that I was playing for a long time, but it was just so hard, and so I stopped and watched it on. They've done an update which has a whole bunch of pretty serious fine-tuning difficulty things. Where you can alter, like, how much damage you take and how much damage you do and all this stuff. And apparently there's even a setting where you can make your character, like, indestructible. Well, like, they'll still take damage, but they won't ever die. So, now having this, I haven't tested it out, but apparently it's very effective. I now can't recommend that game high enough to everyone. Oh, I got to tell my friend, too, because she stopped really early because of that. Yeah, no.
Is it a cheat mode? Do you shut off your trophies or whatever to use it?
I don't think so. But I don't know. I haven't gone in and actually looked at it. The Indestructible might be, but the rest, I think, is just... I've seen games like that, too, where the difficulty setting is finer grain than just difficulty.
Right.
And this game sure as shit needed it. But it's a great game, so I highly recommend checking that out. And yeah, I just remembered, there's somebody I know who had to stop really early on because it was too hard. I should get her to play it again. But I think Abby would love it.
Yeah, everything you say about it, it tells me she would, except for the difficulty. She
doesn't. Yeah, but now apparently that's fixable.
Okay, that's cool.
So, and I think they just released their second and final expansion for it, so that's cool.
Okay.
So how's your week been?
Well, lots of stuff going on, but nothing really to talk about. I wanted to ask you, can I ask you a question about something?
No.
Okay, never mind then. How was your week?
What question?
Well, we talked off the podcast about the Dark Angel in Oakland Cemetery in Iowa City. And you mentioned that this was a big deal for you at one time.
Yeah, back in the day.
I'm really interested to know more about that. Like, how did you learn about it? What was your first exposure to it? What were the beliefs you had about it? How did you come to those beliefs about it? All of that.
It was entirely visiting pagan group up here. There was a pagan discussion group up here, and they would talk about it. And it was mostly ghost story stuff. Stories like people, you know, people go there and ask things of it and it comes true and stuff like that. People would do rituals out there invoking it as their goddess figure. And yeah, then there was the whole thing of when you would look up at her in the nighttime, at her face, were her eyes open or closed? And that told you whether or not you had her attention. but nothing really hard and fast.
What made people think that there was some supernatural connection there?
Well, only speaking for me, what made me think it is because these other people told me that.
And they didn't have some rationale or some story.
They didn't share it. They didn't share it. Like I said, I think it was just a haunting kind of thing. And a lot of those, they don't bother in a lot of cases.
Well, so, okay. So what did they think was granting their wishes or whatever it was? What did they think was doing that?
Some sort of spirit that possessed the statue.
Related
to some sort of feminine entity.
Related to the people that were buried there, or
no? I think having absolutely nothing to do with the actual people involved. I think having entirely to do with a cool angel statue that looked kind of black in a graveyard.
Like that, there was something about that ignited some magical thing that they could just tap into. Like,
I mean, I don't believe they would say it's a cool looking angel statue in a graveyard. Of course, it's magical.
Right.
I think they would say when you go there, especially at night, you can just feel a presence there.
And they weren't concerned at all with understanding how that came to be or why that happened.
I mean, already you and I have discussed this in this episode many times more than the total amount of discussion I ever did with anybody about this.
Okay.
Let alone how much I remember. Yeah. But no, I don't believe they were concerned. Or if they were concerned, they did not share that with me.
For people who are listening who don't know, have we ever talked about this before on the podcast?
The Black Angel? I want to say we had, but maybe not. It's cool looking angel statue in a cemetery in Iowa City. It's kind of black. Not like African, like the statue is black. And it's cool looking.
Well, Oakland Cemetery in Iowa City is, I think, the oldest cemetery in Iowa City. Iowa City used to be the capital of Iowa. There's even a Capitol building still in Iowa City that is the centerpiece of the University of Iowa campus.
It's called the Old Capitol Building.
And before they moved the Capitol to Des Moines, of course. And the people, like the first governor of Iowa is buried in this cemetery and so on. It's a very picturesque cemetery. If I took like video of it and edited it together, you'd think it was a cemetery that you'd seen in a movie or something because it's so picturesque.
But you would be wrong.
And actually this Black Angel, if I were shooting something and I wanted to give that effect of, oh, here's an old picturesque cemetery, I would not include any shots of this thing because I don't think it goes with that aesthetic at all, in my opinion. But there's this large, I think it's 9 feet tall, but it's also on a, wait, is the 9 feet including the pedestal or? I guess it is. It must be. Do you know?
No.
Okay.
I didn't know 9 feet. I haven't seen this thing in easily 15 to 20 years.
Anyway, it's practically in the center of the cemetery. There's a pedestal that's probably 5 feet, and then the statue itself. Well, the statue itself is probably 8. Maybe it is 8 or 9 feet, and then the pedestal's like 5 feet, so it's pretty tall. And it's black. The angel is almost like it looks painted black. Her face is facing down. So when Tony was talking about how you'd look up in the face and you could discern if the eyes are open or not, I mean, one of the reasons probably that some people were mistakenly seeing it, her eyes is closed, is because you can't see them very well, actually. Mm-hmm. From down there looking up.
Especially at night.
Yeah, even in the daytime, if you're looking up, there's one of the wings is kind of casting a shadow over her face, even in the daytime. One wing is sort of over her head and the other one's sort of is pointing down. She's looking down. I think she has one arm up, and it's kind of an unusual statue to have in a cemetery. Usually when you have angel statues in a cemetery, they're looking up or they're I mean, sometimes they're crying, I guess, but this is very unusual pose for an angel in a cemetery.
And if you turn away or blink, they suddenly get close. She suddenly gets closer, and she's got fangs.
Anyway, so this statue is sort of legendary in the area. People who first move here often hear about it. Kids go to visit it and things. And there's
stuff. So William just found out about it now.
No. There's stuff associated with it, like, you know, if you kiss somebody in front of it, you're cursed. I mean, weird, completely uninteresting things as far as I'm concerned. When I first got to Iowa City and I heard about it, it was the most boring. All the stories were boring and stupid. I didn't think the statue looked very cool, or it seemed out of place. I was not a fan of this statue.
On nights of the new moon, if you light a candle on the back of the pedestal facing away from the angel, passageway opens up with stairs going down and a snow cone machine down
there. Okay, look.
See, free snow cone machine. Like, this, like, you don't have to pay for it or anything.
The stories that he's just making up off the top of his head aren't any more silly than the stories that people were telling. And another thing that made me disappointed about it was I like to find folk tales and ghost stories and things that are popular in a given area. And this,
crap all over.
No, I just like them. And Iowa City is an old town in Iowa, goes back a long way. And also native people, there was a fairly significant native population here before white people moved in. So there should have been a lot of stories and lore here, but the only lore you can find easily anyway about this area is this stupid black angel. And so I didn't like it. But here's the thing. Recently I visited, my brother was in town, and you know, I asked him if he'd ever seen it, and he said no. So I thought, well, you know, we've got time to kill, because his stepdaughter was starting at the university and he had to wait, because they were only letting so many people help kids move in. And he was not, like, two people at a time, plus the student. And he wasn't one of the people that was going to help her move in. So he just had to kill time here in the Iowa City area for like 2 or 3 hours. So this was one of the things we went to do, was to go see it. And he had some questions about it. So I couldn't remember certain things, so I looked it up. And apparently, since the last time I looked all this up, more information is out there to easily find about, true information about where the statue comes from and stuff. And I actually found that information very interesting about the woman that commissioned it and why she did and when she did.
And why finally discovered the existence of Eugene, Oregon.
Yeah. Yeah. The man that's buried there never lived here. He lived and died in Eugene. She met him there and married him there after she buried her son in Iowa City. She came
so it was
from
all a scam just to get his body to
she came here from Czechoslovakia in the late 19th century with her son, and she came to Iowa City specifically. She was an obstetrician, a midwife, really, I guess. And she was a midwife here also, and that's what she did in Iowa City for a while. But her son passed away, and she buried her son here and resolved that when she passed away, wherever else she was living, she would have her body shipped back here to be buried here also. And then when she got married in Eugene, Oregon, she decided, I guess, to bury that guy here. So that's why they're buried here, is mostly because she buried her son here. But
and all her murder victims.
The statue was commissioned to someone who was also Czechoslovak, or Bohemian is what they called it back in the day, but Czechoslovakian. And I think the most reliable accounts suggest that he submitted it, the finished product, to her, and it was already black. In fact, she didn't like that, didn't want to pay for it. He filed suit. She lost. She had to pay for it. And then, you know, in something like 1918, she finally put it up after having it in storage for a number of years because she didn't want to pay for it. During her lifetime, racist. Well, the thing is, the report was that the guy who made it, the reason he put that black patina on it was because he thought it looked too garish as a brass. It's made of brass, or supposed to be. And he thought it looked too garish for a cemetery. So she disagreed, and they had an argument about it. But anyway, so there it was, this big black Angel in the middle of the cemetery. And she lived for a number of years after it was finally put up there, and it already had a reputation, you know, like people went and interviewed her and asked her, how do you feel about what people think of this thing? And she, of course, didn't like it. Although it wouldn't have mattered. Like it wasn't because it was black. I mean, I think even if it had been bronze, people still would have noticed it and been attracted to it and made up legends about it. I don't think she was going to escape the notoriety of the thing just because it was a different color.
It's a big old friggin' angel. I mean,
yeah. Yeah. And she wasn't happy about it. I think what they said, her complaint was that it drew, she didn't like so much attention being, focused on her,
on her son. Giant angel statue.
Yeah, like, you should have thought this through. I mean, there was no way this wasn't going to attract attention. What did you think was going to happen?
Gotta make it this big.
But anyway, this woman, Teresa, she was married a few times, so she has a number of last names. But anyway, she seems like a super fascinating person to me. I mean, she was a midwife. She moved around a lot. She donated a lot of money to her hometown back in Czechoslovakia. I presume if I ever traveled to that town, I would see all these things, buildings that were built in her name and libraries and stuff, because she sent so much money back. She's just a completely interesting, fascinating person. And suddenly I'm very interested in this, the Black Angel, and where it comes from and who made it. But I've also realized before I talked to you about it, I read some, in the articles I was reading, it talked about people who would bring her
offerings.
Yeah, offerings. Well, that's the thing. See, I always thought all those stories were just silly, but there are actually people who have really felt cursed by her or really felt blessed by her. And that interests me. Like, people who really are believers in it.
She's a goddess figure.
That interests me more than, college kids making up the most boring stories.
Go with the legit one then. What have you seen Isis since we talked?
No, I do want to see it.
Because we all, while you were screwing around, Trish and I looked into the actual history of it.
Of Isis?
Yes.
Oh, cool. What did you find out?
It was given to Herbert Hoover by Belgian children in thanks for saving their lives.
Really? Wow, that's interesting. Yes,
absolutely sounds like something I would make up. It was not. So, Herbert Hoover, big honking businessman, living in the UK during World War II, I guess, or leading up to World War II. And he basically basically puts together an effort to get food to occupied Belgium, because the Nazis aren't doing squat. And so he gets the U.S. government to agree to help, and they bring stuff, and he and a bunch of other businessmen basically run things and act as go-betweens and negotiators to get food to the starving people in Belgium. And, like, if you look at his stuff, the coolest crap he did was before he ever went into politics.
Oh, that would have been
huge in the war effort. He got many awards.
That would have been World War I then.
Okay. I don't remember when he was president, so.
Well, it was before, right before FDR.
Oh, so it was before World War II. All right. Then this would be World War I. And I guess it would have been the Germans who took over.
And that makes sense, because I actually am reading a biography about him very slowly. And I'm pretty sure that is when he lived in England, was before he was president. I don't think.
Well, because he was a big old honking businessman, and he went like straight from that to running I think he went straight from that to being the U.S. Secretary of Agriculture.
Yeah, mining is where is where.
But he got after this whole thing where he got the kids food and everything. That became his like passion. I guess. I don't know. He's really cool. But the point is, he saved a lot of lives, especially children. And so a bunch of them raised money and had this statue made. Why it's of Isis, no clue. But that's what they do. So the children of Belgium gave Herbert Hoover an Isis statue as a thanks for saving them from starvation.
And it's in the town of West Branch. West Branch, which is where Herbert Hoover's originally from.
And it's on the grounds of his museum, I think.
Oh. Okay.
I think. Okay. Or at least near it. But yeah. Yeah, so you should be getting on that.
And it looks Egyptian and all that. I mean, like Egyptian.
So. I, again, haven't seen it in so long. Okay. But I think so.
That's weird that they, why would they? That's a strange thing for them to pick, Isis. I mean, unless it's a Romanized version, because that was a popular thing to do back then, was to make Romanized versions of whatever. It could be an allegory, or it could be even an Egyptian god or goddess, but done in a Romanesque way. So, I mean, that was kind of popular back then, I guess.
It might have been that. I don't remember, and also might not have known if I could see it. So, you should go. You're technically further away, but you're closer to the interstate to get there. So just go.
You know, I...
you don't got a lot going on.
I was going to finish reading this biography about him and then plan to go to the museum. I don't know when, though. I mean, it's probably going to be next year, even if I finish the biography earlier. You know, he's the only Iowan who was ever president. He's a very unpopular president, extremely unpopular, you know, because of... people feeling like he didn't handle the Great Depression very well and whatever else.
But inventor of the vacuum cleaner.
No, I don't think so. No. His career started in mining, and I think mining is where he made his, like, fortune, I guess.
I never realized how unpopular he was until my niece was in a production of Little Orphan Annie.
Oh?
Because there's a specific musical number about how much people hate him.
Oh, yeah.
In that show.
Yeah.
Because it's set during the Depression. Yeah. So come to Iowa. We have two statues.
Yeah, I've just been interested in it. So when you talked about it, I had so many questions afterwards. I just wanted to ask you, but I mean, whatever. I'm still interested in talking. Like, if I was making like a documentary about it, I would very much want to find people who sincerely believe that they've either been cursed by it or blessed by it. And those people are out there, and I'm interested in that.
If you have had experiences with the Black Angel in Oakland Cemetery and want to tell William about it, even if it's made up, as long as you convince him, what the fuck do I care? Go to the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com, and tell us your stories about the angel. Or if the Herbert Hoover Isis statue cursed you, let's also talk about that. Really, you know what? I'm going to widen it. Please go to the blog and tell me about every time you've been cursed by a statue.
Or blessed.
I guess.
Well, I'm interested in both.
Yeah, no, I'm way more interested in the curses. But, I mean, I'm not going to be offended if you talk about them.
Why? Why are you more interested in the curses?
That's just the kind of guy I am this week.
Okay, well, why don't you tell us about your week? I'm sure you have a lot of interesting things to say.
Still chainsawing.
What?
I'm still chainsawing.
What's that mean?
To use a chainsaw.
You're using a chainsaw?
Yes, I was using it last week too.
I don't talked
about
that.
It then too. That's because you don't listen to me.
Yes, I listen to you twice. I listen to you while we're podcasting, and then I listen to it later, and I do not remember that.
You are in the same room when I'm talking twice. You clearly don't listen. Trees came down.
Yeah.
Me and my neighbors. And so I cut them off of the thing, and I drag them into my neighbor's backyard, and there's just a bunch of fallen trees. And they go to the Fab Lab all day because – working remotely, and he's got to run his business and everything, and I gotta borrow their chainsaw and a chainsaw accoutrement anyway, so I'm just cutting them all up, but I'm doing it very slowly because last week I overdid it, because chainsaws are deceptively fatiguing on your body. I think because of all of the buzzing, Like, it doesn't feel like you do much, and then the next day you're like, holy crap, I hurt.
I think when you talked about you and your neighbors were dealing with the trees, I presumed that they were doing the chainsawing.
No, me, for the first time ever, I'm using chainsaw.
Yeah, I just assumed that you weren't. So that expresses a bias I think I was having about you and chainsaws.
I mean, I get it. Like I said, this is the first time I've ever used one. So, I mean, that says something there. So
Yeah, I just assumed that it was not you. That maybe you were doing something else.
Now that it comes up, I guess we're technically talking about our last couple of weeks, because last week was just all about shitting on Jerry Seinfeld. So we didn't talk about much else.
No, we didn't.
Trish and I, it's a lot of movies and TV, I'll be honest. It's a lot. I finished Weird Sisters, the book, which was good. But a lot of movies and TV. We finished, as I said, we finished season 2 of Pose. Cannot recommend that show enough. Along with The Good Place, those now have to be my 2 all-time favorite TV shows.
Yeah, you did mention that already.
Yes,
last week.
Because it's important. You all should watch them. They're both on Netflix in their totality at the moment. There's going to be more seasons of Pose, but nothing's filming right now.
The final season of The Good Place is on Netflix now?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Get your ass over there.
I know. I really should do that.
I bailed on the 3rd season of Legion halfway through.
Mm.
Because I did not give a shit. Like, and I went to a wiki and I read the rest, so I know how it ends. The 3rd season, in my opinion, was weak and pointless and drawn out, and nothing really interesting happened, so I bailed. I did watch season 2 of Altered Carbon. That was very good. I also watched a weird animated movie they made set in the same universe. That was very weird. So, Taskmaster, TV show I love. Shit ton of it's on YouTube. But they're going to be licensing it in the U.S. to air, I think, on the CW and a couple other places, because they're just looking for content because they can't make anything right now. So they're placing them slowly on YouTube. They're through series 6 and they're now in the middle of series 7. And so I go back and I watch the old ones when I'm bored and I want something that, like, I don't have to think too much and it just makes me feel good. So I went to do that a couple days ago and it says, Viacom CBS has said that they own the rights to this. You can't watch this in your country. And I'm like, fuck. That sucks. But I thought about that and I'm like, if they're yelling about the licensing rights, that means it's being licensed somewhere, which almost certainly means I can buy it somewhere. So I go to Amazon Prime, I put in Taskmaster, and they have Series 8, which is a series I hadn't seen yet, available, purchase all 10 episodes, $15. So I did it. I'm very happy about that. And then, the next day, by pure accident, YouTube had me click on an episode of the old ones that are on YouTube, and Viacom CBS is no longer locking them down in this country.
Mm.
So I don't know what happened, but I'm very happy.
Do you have a VPN?
No.
Okay.
I've thought about that. Trish isn't sure how she feels about it ethically. But mostly I don't care because I'm watching these on the TV and I couldn't get it to work on the TV. So
ethically?
Yeah. You're using a program to get around the licensing laws in your country.
Well, I mean, that's one thing you can do with a VPN. You don't have to.
I assume that's why you brought it up in this context.
No, I brought it up in this context because if you have a VPN, sometimes when you go to something that you expect you should be able to watch, it'll say you can't watch this in your country, and it's because your VPN, doing what a VPN does, has routed your IP through another country.
Ah, okay, okay.
And then later, if you can watch it, it's because your VPN, doing what a VPN does, is not routing it through that country anymore. Yes, people do use VPNs to purposely route it through a different country to get around things, but the primary reason we have one, I think, I don't know, maybe the primary reason that other people
have one. So the hacksaws cannot catch you?
Yeah, so you don't have people tracing your IP all the time. But it does, the upshot is you can sometimes, like I'll go into YouTube and won't be able to watch something because suddenly my VPN is routing through Great Britain. So they think I'm British and they won't let me watch something.
Ah, they've clearly never met.
But I've never adjusted it so that I can watch something that I wouldn't normally. I probably would do that though.
I was going to say, watch a YouTube channel and their sponsor is one of the VPN things, that's what they're advertising. Like the actual commercials are about, oh, it's so safe. But like when you get one that's like somebody's YouTube channel and like this episode is sponsored by NordVPN or one of
those. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Their whole bit is I pretend I'm in Japan and look at all this shit I can watch on Netflix.
Well, you know, another thing about that is I don't know how to like, if that's what my VPN's main purpose is, it's not very good at it because I can't find where to just say, set my, you know, I can't find
it. I think it's a newer secondary purpose. I think they were not originally meant for that. And I mean, VPN means a lot of things. I mean, they use a VPN at work. And that's so that you can essentially be away from work, but virtually connected in as though you were on the campus Wi-Fi.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you have access to things and stuff like that. So, but anyway, yeah, so that. We're still watching Lovecraft Country, still loving Lovecraft Country. Everybody should be watching Lovecraft Country.
I was going to ask you about that. Is it still, conform pretty well to the book?
Yes and no. It is still conforming largely in terms of one episode per chapter, which the book is somewhat episodic and it's mostly per chapter. So that kind of works well. It has deviated quite a bit from the story. Like each episode is about the same thing as the chapter was about, but it started deviating pretty heavily. Already. I mean, we have gender swapped several major characters. We have killed off people that didn't die until much later, or in some cases never died. We have had material that came up much later in the book that comes up sooner. In general, we're much more focused on it as allegorically as it relates to current society, which I understand and is useful, and you know, and we're telling a different story that way. Some of the characters are very different in how they are portrayed and their backstory and their personalities. And so it's very different in a lot of ways, and the more it goes on, the less I know what's going to happen, sort of. But it's still awesome, and I love the book. I recommend the book too. Gun to my head, I probably like the book better than the show so far, but they are both excellent, and both the TV show does the book proud. So I highly recommend both of them. Raised by Wolves started today. We haven't watched it yet. We'll probably watch it tomorrow night on HBO Max. That looks very cool.
Yep, it does. We're gonna watch it. Oh, we're watching Lovecraft Country, by the way. I should say that.
Oh, are you? Mm-hmm. You absolutely should have said that. Have you watched all of them so far?
I'm pretty sure, yeah.
There's three.
I think we've seen
three. There was essentially the two-parter that was getting to Artem and leaving Artem. And then there was one about Letty in a house.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's all of them.
Yeah.
Awesome. What do you think? You hadn't watched any of it when last we talked about this.
I like them. It's kind of like with Watchmen, where I'm not a fan of Watchmen. So anything about it that was Watchmen-y, it didn't really do it for me, but it was still, I could still recognize that it was a good show. I don't, you know, Lovecrafty things. I've realized I'm not a huge fan of that,
yeah.
but that's, that's kind of neither here nor there in terms of watching the show. It's very, I'm surprised. They must have a fairly good budget because it's like everything they're doing is really looks great.
And they're upping the horror content a lot.
A lot
of things that were just spooky monsters you could hear in the dark that chased you and you never saw them are like things in this one. And,
it's
and
really
things that are ghosts in this one are like really fucked up looking ghosts. And
it's really interesting. And it's also got like Watchmen where it's probably making people aware of things that happened in Tulsa that they didn't know about. This is probably making people aware of, you know, guidebooks that they made for Black people to be able to travel through America. I mean, that's interesting stuff that I think is important. So there's this historical element that is like I think really important and interesting and very interesting.
The brothers grew up in Tulsa, and the story you hear where he throws the water in his dad's face to wake him up and mm-hmm. talks about that story.
Mm-hmm.
It comes up much later in the book. Montrose tells it himself, and that happened during the riots in Tulsa.
I see. During
the massacre. I really hope they revisit it because they did not do that story justice in just that little blurb. So I really hope he tells it fully later because it's way cooler that way.
I think
the casting in general is amazing.
But
I cannot get over the casting of Montrose, and I never remember that actor. I just always know him as Omar from The Wire, even though I never saw The Wire. But the thing is, that was the first thing that made him noticed in acting, and he just always plays the angriest angry Black man ever. And Montrose Freeman in Lovecraft Country is the angriest angry Black. Like, it hasn't happened yet, but he is pissed at everything in the world, like you would not believe, because of the white man. And I'm just like, that's like party game casting. That's like, if you could have your dream cast for that one, that's dead on. Like, there's no one in the world that can play that part better than him.
The female
I'm so
lead,
excited for that.
The female lead was in Birds of Prey. She was.
Yes. Where she was hugely wasted.
Yeah. Well, mostly.
I don't mean on drugs, but her character was not interesting.
I mean, I liked her character. I liked her.
Yeah. I mean, she did fine. I would love to see could have played that role.
I would love to see them make some Black Canary based films or whatever.
Absolutely.
Within them.
But she is crushing it in this, which is tough because they are making this character way more complicated and way less likable than in the book.
Hmm.
I've been very excited for this show for a while. So
you definitely end each show wanting to know what happens next. I mean, it's very good.
But saw some movies too. Got to talk about them because running out of time. So saw, what movie did we see? We saw Project Power on Netflix.
Yeah, we saw that too.
Did you?
Yeah.
It's fine. For those of you at home, Jamie Foxx and Joseph Gordon-Levitt in a modern crime film where people are putting this drug on the street that gives you superpowers for 5 minutes when you take it, and hijinks ensue. It's exactly what it says on the box. Like, it's like, it's fine. It's fun. If you want to watch a action movie with some superpowers in it occasionally with Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Jamie Foxx, is good. And it has a Black female teenage lead. Cause I really do feel like she's the focal character of it more than either of them.
Yeah,
who does
a
great job with that. And that's good. So that's fun. But you can absolutely never see it, and that's also fine. And I'm not going to go so far as to recommend it to anyone. In general, my critique of it is it's better than Bright.
Yeah, I would say that too.
And that's, well, yes, but I mean, that's damning with faint praise because
Bright
is an absolute horseshit film. Bright is boring and annoying and deeply problematic all at once. This movie was sometimes boring and sometimes annoying, but in general fine, and not that problematic because it wasn't that interesting. Bright, like, they had to work to make it that shitty. And that movie is only fun to watch if you're just going to mock it. But it is fun. Then we watched Horror Noir, the documentary. It's been out for a couple years, and it's been on my radar, but I finally watched it. Horror Noir. I recommend it strongly to anyone. It is based off of a book, but it is a documentary about essentially the history of black horror cinema.
Oh, yeah.
And the role black people played in horror cinema. And it doesn't shy away from the difficulty stuff, but by and large, it's not like an angry movie. It's mostly sort of a celebration of the great tentpole moments of black people acting in, directing, writing movies, and sort of how much they've grown, and just great and brilliant unintentional moments. Like the fact that Night of the Living Dead is huge and is amazing social commentary about race relations, especially given when it was made.
Mm-hmm.
But the interesting thing is that the lead, who is a black man, according to George Romero, was not cast because he was a black, like, that role was not written to be black. That dude just was the best one to audition.
Mm.
Which is fascinating because the commentary is unavoidable, but apparently unintentional.
Interesting.
And The Girl with All the Gifts, which is a much more recent film, same deal. The lead is a black girl, and apparently it was not written that way. She just did the best job. And again, social commentary, very strong. But I'll get back to that one.
Have you seen that one?
I have, but just like yesterday. I'll get back to that.
Oh.
But so I highly recommend Horror Noir. It also taught me a lot of movies that I had not seen for various reasons I was confused about. For instance, I never saw the horror anthology Tales from the Hood. And the reason I never saw it is because, in general, I hate most movies that use the word hood. Boys in the Hood notwithstanding. And it was at the time period where there was a lot of tongue-in-cheek comedy horror with sort of a hip-hop veneer. And I hated all of it. And that's what I thought this was. And then this movie talked more about it. And I'm like, holy shit, I need to see this movie. So a couple of things. Ganja and Hess is a movie I've been wanting to see for a long time, but I was not clear on it. And now I'm like, I really need to see this. And a bunch of stuff like that. Girl with All the Gifts. They referenced it, and it was interesting enough that I watched that. It has a lot of great actors and directors and writers from all over the history of black horror cinema in it. So I highly recommend that documentary. It's kind of everywhere. I don't know if it's free most places. On Shudder, it's free. It's definitely on Amazon, but it might cost a couple bucks to rent. I don't know. Then we watch last night The Girl with All the Gifts. Which is on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen it?
Yes.
Okay. What did you think?
Well, it was very well made for sure.
Yeah.
And the young woman who played the role of the lead role was phenomenal. Yeah. Phenomenal. I think my wife liked it more than I did, but she usually likes that kind of thing more than I do. Well, it was well made. It was definitely well made.
I don't like zombie movies.
Yeah.
Not because, like, I'm bothered by the gore or anything. I'm just supremely uninterested in zombie movies.
Yeah.
I loved this movie.
Oh.
Other than possibly Shaun of the Dead, which is a completely different kind of film, this might be my favorite zombie movie ever. It's very meta. It's not about zombie. Like, and again, fascinating social commentary. And the thing for me is it's very much a piece of speculative fiction in a realm that I enjoy. It is asking some very interesting questions that I really like. And I don't want to spoil things, but it's hitting themes that I feel have only recently really been showing up in some sci-fi and some horror things and some post-apocalyptic movies and things that I've been waiting a long time for.
Hmm.
And I feel it did it really well. It also has Glenn Close in it, once again, playing a role you've not ever seen her play before. Woman's amazing. She can do anything. Crazy.
Yeah.
But yeah, the actor who played the lead, she's going places. Holy shit.
It's a few years old too, so I should look her up and see what she is doing right now.
Just a couple, I think. I think it's like 2018 or something. It's not that old.
Yeah.
But yeah, see what she's coming to next.
Yep.
And then after that, by sheer coincidence, we watched the 1972 Peter Cushing, Christopher Lee movie, The Crawling Flesh. It's a hot mess. But I will say this. At the end, there's sort of a twist revealed. And if you know the twist, I think it retroactively, purely by accident, renders the rest of the movie less dumb.
Hmm. Okay.
There's a certain aspect to it that sort of makes it into an unreliable narrator in a way that a lot of things that I think was just poor screenwriting could now be blamed on lack of understanding and knowledge by the narrator.
Oh, okay.
'Cause it's one of those, you know, forbidden science in 19th century England kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
And they do not understand what this science thing means at all. Oh my God. It's Trish and I just mocked our way through it. It was pretty hilarious. All right, let's draw a thing. We didn't draw a thing last time. People are going to get mad and we do need more things. So write in more, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Do it.
Right, hey, after
this is over.
I want to show you something real quick. Can you see this?
If you stop moving, I can. It's blurry because you keep moving it. It is a gun.
Yeah, ray gun. So when I bought this, it was black, completely black. My brother painted it and weathered it.
Oh.
Looks pretty cool, right?
So he's going to do that to the angel statue?
No. Anyway.
What's it from? It very much looks like it's from something.
No. Nope. I bought it at a... you know, one of those pop-up Halloween stores.
Oh, okay.
Completely black except for these parts that glow and everything.
Well, with that color job now, it absolutely looks like something from a Cronenberg sci-fi thing or whatever. Like,
yeah, I think
that's a weapon in like Naked Lunch or
oh, yeah.
Resistance or something.
Right,
like, that
right.
Totally looks like that. Because it looks vaguely biological now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It does have that kind of look to it. But I really like it. He did this a long time ago and I always wanted to show it to you.
Stu asked us a question that probably deserves more time than we have left, but too bad, Stu. Hey, William.
Mm-hmm.
Is that your ride? The mic must not be picking it up, but
I
sirens
can't hear
are going by.
Yeah, I presume that.
It's the Kevin Pollak chat show. All right. Stu says, are you addicted to anything? If yes, are any addictions detrimental? That second part of the question really broadened. I think he means, are any of our addictions detrimental? You're going to be boring because you probably aren't.
I don't think I am. It's something that I've, like, for pretty much as long as I can remember, I've tried to avoid that kind of thing.
You have an intense addiction to equivocating your positions.
Well, I mean, there are things that I have felt like I either was addicted to or could get addicted to, and then I immediately just started avoiding those things.
Yeah.
Because I am generally of the opinion that an addiction is not a good thing, but I mean, there are people who have told me, yeah, I'm addicted to such and such, and it doesn't seem to be causing them any real difficulties in life.
Yeah, so, I mean, at best, I consider an addiction not that big a problem, but I've never known an addiction that's like, I'm better in my life for being addicted to this.
Like reading, like, for example.
I don't generally think that, but yeah, I don't ever think that's a real addiction. And the people I know who I would go so far as to be like, they are addicted to reading, it causes problems.
Like, yeah, that's what I mean.
They sacrifice a lot of things to read. They don't retain very well.
Yeah, they read
a lot of things they don't like just because they have to and stuff like that. I, as I think I've said many, many times, have a very addictive personality in general, to the degree that it's difficult to talk about having an addiction because I substitute things. I have abused drugs on many occasions. Currently, the only thing in that thing that I'd say I'm addicted to is caffeine. And I don't think it's very strong. I don't drink a lot of it these days, especially since I stopped buying pop and I just do the coffee. I drink one cup, maybe two cups a day, that kind of thing. So I don't think it's too bad. There are definitely things I don't keep around because I know I would. Like, I generally don't have marijuana around because I would come up with an excuse to do it every day. I know because I came up with an excuse for 4 years every day, because it just makes me feel good and usually better than, even if I'm in a good mood, like being high and in a good mood is better. So, but I don't get no shit done. It's bad for me and I eat too much and all sorts of things. You know, you could make arguments about other behaviors that are addictive because there are things that, like, when I feel bad, I do this. I have relationships with food tied to that. I have relationships with sex tied to that. I have relationships with certain media types that I will watch over and over again just because they are comforting, but I'm not getting anything new out of them. One could argue there's an addictive level to that, that it's a sort of soporific. My relationship with food is a tricky one. There's probably something of a food addiction in there, in that I eat emotionally. I eat the way bonobo chimps fuck. I think I've said that before. Whatever emotion I'm having is a call to eat. If I'm depressed, eating will make me feel better. If I'm happy, food is a celebratory thing. If I'm scared, I take comfort in food. If I'm angry, food is something that I can focus on to calm me down. So whatever my emotional state, food makes sense for it.
Well, I think experts in this field often distinguish between a physical addiction and a psychological addiction.
And all of my addictions are psychological. Very, very seldom in my life have I exhibited physical symptoms.
Where you would have physical withdrawal if you tried to stop and all that.
Yes. I have, on occasion in my life, had been so addicted to caffeine that on occasions when I couldn't get some, I would have caffeine withdrawal headaches, and they are bad, but very rarely. I had exactly one nicotine withdrawal headache in my life. It was one of the most painful things I ever experienced. And it was, you know, somewhere in the middle of the 12 or 14 times I both took up and quit smoking. But it's always been psychological for me. And mostly this belief that with any of these things, I could moderate it. That's what tends to do it for me, is I think I can moderate things, and I can't. Once I tell myself, you can't be moderate on this, you can either be constantly consuming it or stop. I'm usually not out, don't have a lot of trouble stopping. But yeah, it's all psychological. It's all, very seldom do I have a physical addiction.
I mean, I generally in my life, as just a matter of course, do not trust myself to not get addicted to something. I mean, one of the reasons why I've never had alcohol is because I have no idea what impact it would have on me. I realize that's probably not a huge chance. Just trying something once would be a problem. I mean, I don't think that's even really a thing, but I just don't.
I mean, unless I generally, you really like it.
I don't really trust myself to, you know, I don't know if I just think I have an addictive personality or that I have a tendency to obsess about things if given the chance. And so I just sort of steer clear of things that I might become obsessive about. And I think I do. I mean, I think I do fixate on some things. And I think that's a problem, and I really have to deal with that. So I try to avoid, well, that's another thing. I try to avoid, like, if I'm going to do something, like eat some food, for example, when I don't feel particularly hungry, I will actually sit and think about, why am I eating this food if I'm not particularly hungry? Is it to make myself feel better about something? Wouldn't it be better if I dealt with that emotion instead of eating something? I mean, you know, it's like, these are things that I've somehow been taught or taught myself or learned to be very thoughtful about. But, you know, it also means that I sometimes overthink, you know, things to do or not to do, or whether I should do something or not. I've been told that a lot, that I overthink, you know, things. So maybe that's my addiction, is just thinking things through, like, way more than it would ever be actually practically useful.
I don't know. You might want to think about that a little. Because yeah. These questions you ask, I have them. Just like you, I'm like, not really hungry. Why do I want to eat this? Is there an emotional thing? Maybe I should deal with that instead. And I sit for a second, and then I say, no, fuck it. I'm having some chocolate chips.
Well, yeah, but I think in general, you are more likely to go, what the heck, you know? I think you're more likely to do that. Yeah. Than I am, but maybe sometimes that doesn't work out for you, but I think maybe sometimes it does work out for you. Maybe you do things that I wouldn't do that wouldn't be a problem if I did them, wouldn't, you know, they might even be a positive thing if I did them, but I'm too stuck in my overanalysis of it to ever do it.
Most of the things I do are awesome, and you will never be able to achieve my level of awesomeness in large part by your unwillingness to do. No, that's entirely how it works. It's like when you're a kid and there's the abandoned house and your friends make you go there and you have to walk down the basement steps and touch the doorknob and run back up. Otherwise, you're chicken. If you do it, you're cool. It's the same thing. How awesome you are is entirely based on how much stuff you're willing to do.
No, I don't think that's true.
Absolutely. I recently saw an Italian giallo movie with a murderer in it, and we couldn't figure out who it was, but the film starts with the dumbest thing, with these two little boys drag this other little boy to his place, and they're like, you have to go get this ball out of the basement where the ghost supposedly is, or you're a female. And that was the thing. They would chant, you're a female, you're a female. And it turned out this was just a movie that this lady was filming. And the film we were watching was about the guy writing the soundtrack to it. But while he was doing that, there were these murders going on. And it turned out at the end that the murderer was a guy we already knew whose alter ego was a woman, because he was that little kid and his friends saying, you're a female, like, made him have a split personality that was female, and then killed all these women to show he was a man, I think.
Oh my gosh.
It was the worst.
That's stupid.
And I had a hunch, because, again, it didn't make any sense. Like, not, you're a girl. Like, we had that sexist bullshit back in the day. But, like, there was something just very deliberate about them saying, you're a female, you're a female. I'm like, So, yeah, awful. Movie's called The Blade in the Dark. Don't watch it. It's bad. It's very bad.
Okay.
That's all the show we have this week. So, everybody be watching Lovecraft Country. Everybody go watch Pose Season 2 and Good Place Season 4 if you haven't watched it. Everybody watch Horror Noir. And then beyond that, Girl with All the Gifts is very good, but you don't have to watch it. And you definitely don't have to watch Project Power or The Creeping Flesh or
Creeping
Blade
Flesh.
In the Dark. Creeping Flesh is pretty funny, though. And it's not, I mean, it's not good, but it's not one of those that, like, get the kids out of the room for it. Like, it's there's no nudity or anything, and the gore is ridiculous 1970s gore and not good 1970s, like, very little of it. Mostly it's a skeleton that regrows its flesh, and that looks really weird. And it has Peter Cushing saying, as part of a scientific explanation for something, I am the white god. This was where I thought maybe he didn't understand the word science. You know, this was part of that. Anyway, yeah, so everybody check out that. Go to the blog. Tell us your feeling on pepperoni positioning. And I don't know, some other thing. Oh, yeah, make up some stories about the Black Angel just to mess with William. And we will talk to you all next week.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.